people, you are listening to episode 89 of the Africana Woman Podcast. Chulu is my name. I am a writer, personal brand consultant, entrepreneur, and mentor. This show is the home of African women's stories. We share ideas, triumphs, challenges, and lessons from our perspective as women. Our library is a step to cementing our place in history. Her story, your story, is powerful. Thank you so much for tuning in. Welcome to all the new listeners and welcome back, family. Click the subscribe button to make sure you're always the first to know when a new episode drops. Shout out to Patra Gichobi. She sent this message. So sweet. Hi, I am Patra from Kenya. I just want to appreciate your work, especially on the podcast. You have taught and reminded me so much. You are one person I would love to have as a friend. You are brilliant. Be blessed. Oh my goodness. When I saw this message, I was so touched. Thank you, Patra, for such beautiful feedback. So I reached out to her and now she is a member of the AWV book club. She is such a vibe. Such a vibe. I love that I am surrounded by like-minded and like-hearted women. So if you're listening and you're not part of the community, like, what are you waiting for, sis? Reach out and I will get you set up personally, okay? Now, we are 10 conversations away from the 100th episode. Hi, I need to get someone with a deep voice to do a countdown, you know, like 10, 9, 8. So speaking about countdowns, we are counting down the days to the AWV retreat. Oh my goodness. Listen, I cannot wait to bring these amazing women together. And we are going to rest, reconnect, and realign. One of the things that breaks my heart when working with women is how difficult it is for them to rest. Not the resting, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when you're exhausted late into the night and the house is finally asleep so you can put your legs up. No, I'm not talking about that. I am talking about walking away from your commitments. Work, kids, your partner, dependents, school, everything. Walking away for a few days and saying, this is time for my enjoyment. Now, this last week, I took a road trip to Lusaka and I have not left town for almost 4 months. Can you believe that? 4 whole months. I've just been in Kabwe. And the change of scenery, the drive down to Lusaka, it just did me the world of good. By the time I got back home, I had restructured my business and gotten clarity around some things I have been wrestling with for some time. So a change of environment gives you a different perspective. Okay? If you would like to join us for the retreat, hey, we have a couple slots available and you can find the link in the show notes to sign up. Now, our conversation today is really, really special. I actually recorded it when I went to Lusaka, hey? And as you will hear, we had recorded an interview about a year ago and then I lost it. Oh my gosh, so embarrassing to say. So I'm so grateful that we were able to do the recording again. And this is actually the first episode that I have done in person. Like, so exciting. Here is a little information about our guest. Monde Zama has always been a hustler. When she was in secondary school, she would purchase sweets and sell them to her peers. Monde studied publishing and media at university and took night classes at Hoxton Makeup Academy to become a makeup artist, and she would offer her services for hair and makeup at fashion shows, music videos, and personal clients. A few months in, Monday started selling hair and accessories on www.harmsharmy.bigcartel.com, and that was her entry into e-commerce. During the COVID-19 pandemic, she was tasked with helping to sell some of her family's farm produce to her Zambian friends all over the world. There were about 80 bags. Now, within a week, they had managed to sell all of them. And Monday could see that there was a lot of potential. And thus, she got to working on what is now Zasik Enterprises Limited. Please enjoy this conversation. Oh my goodness, guys. So this is the first time that I'm doing a interview in person. And then it's also with someone very special. So this is Monday.
Hello,
and
everyone.
So Monday, like, when were we connected? It's almost 2 years, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it's almost 2 years now.
Wow.
Since I started my business.
Really?
Yes, Kunda yeah. was the one that
yes, when yes, she was saying like, that, oh, this oh, is a point.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's when it
yes.
started.
So shout out to Kunda because yes. Kunda connected us.
Yeah.
And from then, we've always just been keeping in touch mm-hmm. and, you know, supporting each other wherever we can. I'm always yeah. telling people about her business.
I'm always telling everyone about her podcast.
So it's just so nice that we finally get to meet.
Yes.
Okay. Confession.
Mm-hmm.
Guys.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know, right? So confession.
Yeah, go on.
We recorded an interview, I think it was about a year ago almost.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'm ready to release it. I go look for it and God, can't find it anywhere. My heart sank like it was the worst. And then I'm like, okay, how do I tell her that I've lost the interview, you know? So I sent a message. I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel awful, guys. I don't even know how to say this. Like, we need to do the recording again. And then she's like, listen, I'm coming to Zambia. I was like,
yes!
Hey!
I was like, don't worry, we'll do it in person.
I was almost excited. Oh, good, you've lost it. We can meet now.
Right?
So it works out really, really well. And
yeah.
we're here now.
Yes.
So, okay, so let's find out a bit more about it. Because I know about it and I know I've done the interview before, but you
yes.
guys obviously don't know.
Okay.
Okay, so
yeah.
Monday, tell us about your favorite childhood memory.
Okay, my favorite childhood memory, oh my goodness, probably changed now from the last one. My favorite childhood memory would probably just be being free, being able to roam around with my friends and not really having to stay indoors all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe playing out and,
yeah.
you know, going to school is a different experience here to when you're in England. It's like go to school, come back home, and that's it. That's
yeah.
where it ends.
Yeah.
I very much remember the sunflowers at my grandma's
yeah.
grandparents' farm. Mm-hmm. I remember that so vividly because we would go there on the weekends and, you know, it was just something that stuck with me. I don't know what they use the sunflowers for, but I just remember.
Do you know that I always wonder? Because I
yeah.
always, like, when you're driving, I see a lot of places, a lot of houses with
sunflowers. Yes.
And I'm like, so do they press them? They get the yes. oil? Like, what are they doing
look
with
into
it?
That. I
yeah.
need to look into that. Because I
or they just like the seeds. Maybe they like to eat the seeds.
Maybe.
I've never, I honestly don't get it.
I was going to say I've never had sunflower seeds before, but I have in, like, you know, those granola
cereal things.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. And I just remember how calming and free it was mm. just to be a child. I think mm. these days everything is just so much, you know, kids are in their own virtual worlds and, you know,
yeah.
it's
either virtual or very regimented.
Yes.
So it's like the parent is like that helicopter parent.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're going for piano lessons.
Yes.
And then you're going for soccer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then you're going for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of the two. Yeah.
Yeah. I almost feel like I had quite a bit of freedom.
Mm.
You know, even though my grandparents were like, oh no, you know, you shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that. But like, realistically speaking, at least I had like, the outlet to be able to go outside,
mm-hmm.
which is a luxury that not many people can afford right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like one thing that I really remember.
Yeah. Well, you have to give a bit of context.
Yes.
So you grew up
in Zambia first, mm-hmm. and then you went to England.
Yes.
Yeah, so just tell us a little bit about that.
So I came, I'm not in England. I'm in Zambia. So I left Zambia when I was 7 to meet with my mom, and I schooled in here right up till grade 3, mm-hmm. grade 4. And then when I got to England, I had to start grade 4, and yeah, it was an interesting transition because I was now a minority. Mm. I was now having to explain my blackness, and I was having to, you know, show people that I can do the things that they can. And the biggest thing was like trying to, you know, it was always explaining myself, mm. always saying, oh no, but you know, in my country we do this, in my country we do that. Mm. And it sometimes it kind of gets tedious because it's like, oh my goodness, like I have to always be a different person, even down to my accent. So like before, obviously I had a Zambian accent, and I still tell people now, like, I still have a Zambian accent, because in my head, I still have that thing.
Yeah.
But, like, the having to adapt, it is a lot for a child mm. to go through. And I feel like one of my goals in life is to hopefully keep my children in one place
mm.
or homeschool them mm. so that they don't have to ever have to feel to define themselves in a different way just to fit into a certain environment, because I feel like that's some kind of trauma. Because now what you find is that I'll speak to, like, I went to South Africa a few weeks ago and I didn't want to talk, and when I did talk I tried to put their accent on because
yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be different.
Yeah,
I don't want to be
code
different.
Switching.
Yeah, yeah, I don't yeah. want to be different. And it's the same, like, if I speak to people in England who are of predominantly black backgrounds, if I can hear them and hear their Ebonics, and I'll be like, yo fam, what are you saying? Like, mm. do you know what I mean? And mm. it just depends on who I'm speaking
exactly.
to. And I think a lot of black immigrants do that. We have to be able to adapt to certain situations yeah. because we don't want to explain ourselves because it's very tedious. So yeah, that's kind of my little background with yeah. regards to that.
Yeah, I can totally relate to what you're yeah. saying about just the code switching, because that's something that I, you know, because my background is I was in Zambia, then I went to the UK, then the US, and each place, UK, oh, your accent,
yes.
US, oh, your accent. Mm. I'm like, there's no winning, yes, guys. Yes. There's no winning, yes. Oh, my word.
Yes, and the biggest thing now is like, okay, you go to England, and now I've got this accent, but I'm still black and a minority.
Mm.
I come to Zambia now, and I'm not a minority anymore, but my accent gives me away all the time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, yesterday I was in a cab, and the guy was like, where are you from? I was like, I'm from Zambia. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm Zambian. And then he's like, no, where are you really from? And I'm like, oh, you mean as in, like, where I came from, as in where I lived? Yeah. Like, uh-huh. you know? But when people in England ask me that, I'm like, I'm Zambian. So yeah. it's just like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
just, it's very annoying.
It is. Because even right now, people will ask me, where are you from? And I'm like, but I'm Zambian. I get yeah, the same yeah. thing. People are like, no, you sound like South African mm. or from Botswana or yeah. something. And I'm just like, you know what? There's no winning. There's but, absolutely no winning.
But can we not just
be happy yeah. that we're all, like, you know, living our lives. Exactly, yes, right?
I'm human.
Exactly. So, yeesh. Okay. So tell us what happened, like, after high school.
Yeah.
What did you go on to do? What did you study?
Yeah.
You know, all of that.
So I studied publishing, journalism and media. So after, I actually came to Zambia in 2013, and I was pursuing a music career. And I remember my family helping me with that. And the thing that kept coming up was, oh, you haven't got a degree. You haven't got a degree. You haven't got a degree. And I'm like, oh,
that's your family.
God, yes. Mm. And it was like, oh my goodness, like, really? Mm. I need to get this degree then. So I went back to England. And actually, before I actually went in that 2013, I did a year. So I went back to England and I didn't complete the year. So I had to repeat everything again. Mm. So I did the 3 years, and I was quite scared to start again. Cause you know, when you, like, that was my first time, like, repeating anything, and it was
yeah.
just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But the funniest thing is, like, it was good because everything that was being taught, I already knew. So it was almost like a refresher. So it was quite easy to get through that year.
Mm.
And then, so I got my degree in 2015, I believe. So I've got a degree in publishing and media. And after that, I did like an internship, a free internship.
Oh, God. Tell us about it.
Do you know what? I worked so hard. I remember, I believe it was, so the first free internship I did was at a radio company.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was a fashion one. It was in Central London.
Yeah.
Central London is so expensive just to get the transport in anyway.
Yeah.
So I had a job and I was working as a support worker with children with autism on weekends. And I remember I'll be doing like 15 hour shifts over the weekend. Wow. Because I knew that I needed the money for the week.
Yeah.
So I was like a zombie at the end of it. And I remember starting the job. And this is the thing, like, it's so glamorous. These fashion jobs are so glamorous.
Mm.
But once you get in them, they're very overworked and underpaid. Mm. You almost feel like, you know, when people were talking about fashion,
mm-hmm.
fast fashion, how, you know, children are the ones who are used to make clothes in, like, I don't know, Indonesia or India or China. You understand how unethical the business actually is,
mm-hmm.
because I was coming in and I was putting in, I was working from about 9 o'clock till 6 o'clock, and sometimes if you had a stylist, you'd be working till late hours at night, and they won't pay for your lunch, they won't pay for your transport, they won't pay your wages.
Okay.
So it was like you're just doing that just to get the experience. So I remember I did that for 3 months, and I was really pushing to like get to the next stage. And I remember I think just in between that, my mum kicked me out of the house. I was just like, yo. this is actually crazy.
And but I remember, what happened there? Why were you kicked out?
Okay, so,
like, let's go back to that.
Okay, so
I've been kicked out before, honey. So
you have. Okay. So like I had a boyfriend who would who lived in a different country. He lived in England, and she's gonna find out now. She's gonna watch this. She's gonna be like, oh, that's why. And I didn't really want to say, like, I'm very much, like, you wouldn't know my business until I told you kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm very open, like, I could tell you anything, but if you don't ask, I won't tell.
That's me.
So, like, I'm just like, you don't need to know. So I didn't really ever tell her about anything. And but there's a reason why I didn't. Now we're getting into therapy. There's a reason why I didn't, because obviously how she, like, the family had treated my previous relationship. And I was no. I'll keep it to myself until I know that I'm ready to settle down with this person, just for respect for myself and them. So he lived in a different country, and I would go and see him, and it was good. And then I would come back, and she would be questioning my finances, and she'd be like, okay, so if you can afford to do this, then you can afford to pay your own bills. So you can leave the, oh my God. And I remember, like, I just didn't know what to do. And I was so angry at the time, because I couldn't believe that she couldn't understand where I was coming from. And I didn't want to tell her. I didn't want to confide in her with what exactly was going on. It was like I was seeing someone who was in a different country and he was paying for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult to, like, how do I even explain that to her? You know, she'll just be thinking, what? Like, at your age? And it's just like, oh, whatever. So I remember leaving, and I stayed with my cousin for about 2 weeks, and I stayed with my sister. And then that was when I was proactively, like, looking for a job. And I had never worked so hard before looking for a job. You know when you're desperate?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you will make sure that CV is seen by everyone.
Yeah.
I was posting. I was going into recruitment agencies. I was asking them, are you recruit? Anything. I wanted to get anything. But the biggest thing was, like, I wanted to get, like, a corporate job, because I wanted to get my foot in the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
So eventually I did actually get a job. I think the salary was quite low. I think it was about, by Zambians.
No, we don't compare.
No.
Now you cannot do that.
The cost of living is higher.
Exactly, yeah.
So I remember, I think I got the job, and it was around the corner from my mom's house. I was just like, Are you kidding me? So she'd kick me out, and I was staying at my sister's house in South London, and yeah. I had to now move back.
Mm.
So I had a bit of savings, and I was doing people's makeup, and I was just hustling. I was like, to make this money, I was like really hustling. I used to do hair and makeup, so I'll do makeup here, do hair there, whatever would make money. And then I remember when I got the job now, I was like, oh my God, I'm happy. And I told my sister, and she was like, yeah, well done. And I'm so grateful to her because she allowed me to stay with her for like, I said, I was like, yeah, I'll stay for a few weeks. And I said, like 3 months. And I'm so grateful that she did that because, you know, like sometimes it doesn't have to be monetary, but the fact that she tolerated me for that long, like speaks volumes. That's why I always have my sister Tendai, I always have her back. You know what I mean? Like if anyone says anything, I'm like, nah, like, you know, she had me when nobody else did. So shout out to Tendai. So I remember now getting, now trying to find a place, and I was like, okay, where am I going to look for a place? I need to look for an apartment. Then, you know, people are renting out their rooms and things like this. And I found a place, and fortunately one of my friends helped me with the rest of the deposit. I was like so grateful to them, and they were like, oh, don't worry, you'll pay me back later.
Yeah.
And which I did, and I started the job. And I remember, like, I was trying to save money, and I was just like, okay, the place wasn't too far away, but it's a thing where it was inconvenient to get to.
Yeah.
So it made sense for me to either get the bus, or I could walk it and it would take me about 40 minutes to an hour, or I could take the bus. I would take two buses, or I could take the train. Mm. So I was like, okay, I'll take the bus, and then once I get there, you know, I'll walk the rest of the way. So that's what I did. And it was good. It was a good job. And after about 2-3 years, I left the job. And in between then, I was still trying to, I actually stopped doing my music because the passion had died down now, because everything was about making money and, you know, how do you monetize your music? It's so expensive for studio sessions, so expensive for everything from hair to makeup. And you always, it's a fast industry. Everything has to be different all the time. So I just put that to the side. And even like my inspiration, I just wasn't inspired to write anymore. I wasn't inspired to sing anymore. So I stopped that. And I said,
do you think you'll go back?
I think I will. I do feel like I will. There's so one of our friends, Kundo and I's mutual friend Nasana, she's I think she's going to be in her 40s soon, or she is in her 40s, and I really look up to her because I'm like, oh my God, she's doing what she likes doing. She does music, and I'm like, oh wow, like if she can do it, then I can do it as well. Like I there's no limit to when I can start.
Yeah,
so exactly. I think for me, it has to just be right, and I don't want to do it for just monetizing sake. I want to do it because I enjoy it. So there's actually an opportunity. Whilst I'm in Zambia, somebody's asked me, oh, just come to the studio and see what you can do. And I'm like, okay, cool, that's fine. Just to see, just to see how I am. You know I'm a bit rusty, you know, I'm a bit rusty right now, but I know that I probably will most likely enjoy it. But yeah, I've had other jobs in between that. I've worked in, so that was a print company that I worked in. Then I worked for a landscaping design company.
Yeah.
And then after that, COVID hit. And that's when COVID hit, and then the business completely was different.
Yeah.
And then I just said to myself, I was like, nah, this is not it. Fortunately, my grandma now was like, oh, we need to sell this 80 bags of rice, and you know, people are not buying because of the pandemic, and it's so difficult. Like money was very scarce in Zambia at that time, like right at the beginning of COVID. What was going on?
You know what I think it was? I think it's just the thing of people didn't really know how long this was going to take.
Yes.
So it was kind of the thing where you're just like keeping it. People didn't really want to spend because then you don't know how long it's going to stretch. And then at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, everybody is at home and then you're not working. So you don't know if your company is going to pay you because they're not, the business isn't working.
Yeah.
So everyone was like really holding on tight to their monies.
Yes.
So yeah, I think that was what was going on.
So I now remember she was like, oh, can you help us reach out to your friends? And we were able to sell those 80 bags in a week. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, there's something there. And initially my business, That's It Global, .com. I wanted it to be my grandma's thing. I wanted her to sell her produce. You know, she's got a farm. They've got layers. They've got eggs. They've got, you know, pigs and green beans and maize. You know, they're very self-sustainable.
Yeah.
And that's an inspiration in itself, you know, to be able to live a life like that. So from they just couldn't get it. They could not get the what concept. I was trying to do.
Yeah.
It was relatively new and I get
it.
So I said, okay, I'm going to set up this business for myself. And I think it took me about three months from conception to the 7th of November 2020.
Yeah.
Was when I launched. And I remember just, I had made a grocery store on Big Cartel before, but I had never made one on Shopify. So I was learning everything from scratch again, going on YouTube and trying to learn how to put the products on and, you know, starting the company. And there's been so many hurdles in between. Oh, my goodness. It's been, like, I registered it in Zambia.
So the thing you have to explain is that, well, explain the concept of your business.
Okay.
Yeah. Because you were in the UK and then you're setting up a business which is going to run in Zambia.
Yes.
In COVID times.
Yes.
Girl. Yes. That's like, it's a lot.
I can see the opportunity. It was so weird. Okay, so the business I run is ZasitGlobal.com. It allows people in the diaspora or Zambians all over the world to purchase groceries for their family and friends living in Zambia. So it's a doorstep delivery service. So we started with hampers. So from about, I think initially we start from about £25. We'd have like basic hamper with like maize meal and dry foods and a bit of like Ajax and just little small things that you would basically need in the month. And I remember we were literally just giving out the hampers. If I start to look at the money amount, oh my God. Like the basic hamper was about the 25, we had 25 kg bag of maize meal, you had 10 kg rice, and I was just like,
this is not
making any sense.
Yeah.
But once I kind of got the margins and said, okay, let's sort things out properly, then I was able to see how we're able to scale it up, which is why I'm in Zambia right now. I'm trying to look at the opportunities on how we can expand. And yeah, that's kind of
But it was like 2020, girl. So this is 2 years. How has it gone? So you've been working remotely for 2 years.
Yes.
And how has the business been? Mm-hmm. What has the response been like? You know? Yes.
So I've been working remotely for it's been 18 months.
Yeah.
So it was November that we started.
Yeah.
So what month are we in now? We're July.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what the biggest thing was like, getting people to trust me and trust the business, and it's gone well. It's gone really well because we've been making money. We've got our
is this the suppliers or the consumers, like the clients,
the consumers, okay. The suppliers, they're easy to source. You know, it's just trying to find reliable suppliers. But the consumers themselves, you know, some people were like, oh no, you know, these brands, we don't really like them. You know, there's certain Mongol rice that we prefer and things like just a lot of things, like just as you were getting feedback, basically,
then you know what the
and I was loving it. I was loving it because a lot of people were giving us the chance. So especially around Christmas, what you find is that people would just buy a lot because it's like, you know, they just want to make sure that their family are okay. And the biggest thing during COVID is that a lot of people couldn't come home.
Yeah.
So it was true. Almost like the shopping that they would do
when
it was a lovely gift to give to their parents or their family and friends. The business has done well. We're making money on each hamper. And we're just open to collaboration, really. Open to collaboration. And me being here is just trying to chase that money, trying to scale up, trying to see if I can open a grocery store. There's just a plethora of things. I feel like...
Okay, hold up first. Let's go back. I want you to talk about how would you characterize work life in the UK?
Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of what?
Just like, how'd you characterize it? What are your first thoughts? What are the words that would come up for you?
Work life in the UK is just tedious.
Yeah.
It's tedious. Like, you never see your money.
Mm. And oh, wow.
Like, for me, it's like, it's bills upon bills.
Mm.
And when you do spend money for yourself, it just goes just like that. Because the cost of living is so high. I think this is probably the worst economy that we've ever had in a very, very long time. People are starving, like not like the luxuries that people had before. They're starting to slow down now because you're now thinking, okay. I remember I saw something on the news. It said that the guy was like, "Oh, I don't know whether to feed myself or my dog." The guy was like, "Yourself."
I know, right? Like, it's a thought. Like, which one?
What? But it's just like putting that into context. It's like, oh, wow. Like his dog is almost like his child.
Mm.
So you can think, like, if you're thinking in that sense, it's like, oh, it's really, really getting bad.
Mm.
You know, the electricity prices have gone up, the cost of living, everything's gone up. So when you think about work life in England, it's terrible because even, you know, one thing I like about Zambia is my family is here.
Mm.
Even though my family is, I've got family in England, it's very difficult for us to have conversations. You know, even though people are in your business, it's,
I love it. In your business.
Even though people are in your business, it's nice to know that somebody's got your back.
Yeah.
I mean, there's pros and cons to everything. And I know things like mental health are a big issue here. Like, you know, if you said to somebody here that you're depressed, you know, they'll just be like, oh, no, we don't believe in that. But I believe that here in Zambia, people are already in your business and like, oh, what are you doing here? Why are you doing that? No, get up and do something. You know, that's them encouraging you to get out of a depressed mindset. So I feel like all of that helps. The sun helps so much. The food that we consume here is so much better than any other genetically modified foods.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it's organic. Yeah. Like, your grandma's place where they're producing the food.
You know what's going in, where it's come from. So it's just that it's the quality of life.
Yeah.
You have to be able to choose what's right for you. And most of the time, when you're looking at to the Western world, you're just looking at these beautiful diamonds and all these lights, and people don't tell you how difficult it is to live a very good life. And you know, it starts from, there's a lot of things that I wish us minorities knew better. You know, saving money and having a community. And for me, if I was raising my child now, money would be a massive conversation that we would have. And you know, managing your life, work-life balance, and you know, getting out into the world, saving your money and staying at home until you're able to, like, what you can invest in, what can you, like, yeah, like staying at home until you're able to move on.
But we got this thing of telling our kids, like, you need to move out by 18. Like,
yes, that's a westernized mindset. Because for me, and I've always said to guys, especially, I always say to guys, I can't stay with a guy until I'm married. And that's like something that's probably embedded in me from me being brought up in Zambia for so long, not for so long, but for those 7 years. So when someone's now telling me that, you know, we should be dating and we should live together and things like this. And I'm just like, huh?
Does it make sense?
Like that? No, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know if you're able to provide for me. Exactly. I don't know. I can't even. I am not sustainable on my own right now. So how are we going to do this together?
Mm.
And I know that sometimes I'm probably overthinking this as well, because there's actually benefits to being married and being with someone, because you're able to cut costs and you're able to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on which quality of life you want to live.
Yeah. So you mentioned something about community, right? And I always, you know, we always see, let's say, you know, Indian communities, Nigerian communities. Do you think it's as galvanized for Zambia,
in England? So at the moment, I feel like for Zambia, now people are trying to get together. Now people are seeing the power of community.
Yeah. But then what was missing like, before? I'm like, why was this not obvious before?
I don't know,
make it make sense. I like, don't know why has it taken so long? So
some people say to me, like, when I talk about, oh yeah, I'm Zambian, some Zambians, like, the pre... how do I even...
The prehistoric...
First generation settlers.
Yeah.
That's the politically correct term. So, okay. Post independence, first generation settlers, that's the term. They had to come from England, start afresh. Like, literally, it was just them and the world.
Mm.
And I think for them, it was just so brutal that it was a dog-eat-dog world.
Mm-hmm.
Chop or get chopped, eat or get eaten.
Yeah.
So it was that thing of, you can't trust anyone.
Yeah.
You know, and people were desperate. I know that there's been cases where, you know, someone will trust somebody with money or they'll do stuff and, you know, that person didn't do what they said they would.
Mm.
And for me, I don't even take anything personally anymore.
Mm.
Like coming slightly out of that now and trying to understand how people take things. Because I think people make decisions based on their current circumstances, their current mindset.
Yeah.
And it's never personal. It is never personal. Like, if somebody needs money, it's because of them. If they're if they're taking from you, yes, it feels personal, but it really isn't. It's not about, it's got nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It could be anybody here. If there was a pickpocketer here and they pickpocketed me, for example, they don't know me from anywhere, so I can't take that personally.
Mm.
It's all to do with them. And I think what the new generation of settlers are doing now is they understand that, okay, our parents haven't really established anything by being independent.
Mm.
So I believe that we should collaborate and we should come together in order for us to move forward.
Mm.
So now you've got things like the Zambian Network that I was telling you about, that Sean runs.
Mm.
And that's been helpful with my starting my business, because I was able to go on there, find out who does what, how we can collaborate, how I can move my business forward. And just in general, you know, so we can see the power of collaboration, even with this current government. The diaspora put so much money behind that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And you can now see that, okay, so we are capable of coming together and building infrastructures and building certain things that are able to move the next generation on. Because one thing that we don't want to happen is now our children struggling to look after us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why isn't it that we haven't set that foundation
mm-hmm.
in order for them to be sustainable and in order for ourselves to be sustainable? Because I really don't feel it's nice to expect your child to look after you when you've had all of this time.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if your child is your insurance policy.
Yeah.
Which I see a lot of in African households. It's like, oh, you have to look after this person. But like, as I'm making money, how am I now putting 60% of that towards my external family members? And I can't even pour that into my own self. I can't pour that into my savings. So when a pandemic happens or something causes me to lose my job, I'm stuck and I'm back to square one. And, you know, you go back to your family and they'll degrade you, because it's like, well, why didn't you save the money? Well, so it was difficult for me to do so. So I think the new generation can see the power of collaboration, can see the power of discussing certain things, mental health, talking about money management, talking about community, and just coming together.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Yeah.
So this lady, she landed in Zambia and she landed in Hungry Lion.
Yes. Yes. I love it.
So how long has it been since you've been in Zambia?
Since I had a Hungry Lion.
Well,
it's been about almost 10 years.
10 years.
10 years.
Okay, tell me what it's like to land, first of all. Yes. So you landed in probably the new airport, right?
Yes.
So tell me just like coming back, what's that like?
I was impressed.
Yeah?
I was so impressed. First of all, you know when you land, there's just this feeling like, I'm home.
Yeah.
Like, there's these drums. Like,
yeah.
I'm joking. No drums. No drums.
Nah, like, no drums. No, go ahead.
But like, you know that feeling. Yeah, like, yeah. Oh my God, I'm home now. It felt good. The only issue, like, when I was coming through immigration now, I had a British passport. And I'm like,
oh, the line.
Come on. The line. The paying for it. I'm like, I was born here. Like, what's this? What is this? I hate having to explain myself again. Explaining my blackness.
Yeah.
And my passport.
Yeah.
So coming through, it was lovely. Seeing the new airport. Seeing the structure that's been built. I think there was a lot of emphasis from consuming Zambian content from the UK. There was a lot of emphasis on, oh, the Chinese have done this, they've taken over. But they've done it, you know, they've done it. So okay, this is how you can start justifying certain things. Like, even though that I can see how that they treat Zambian nationals, and that's not right, but when you start seeing what's coming out of having immigrants, you know, it's a win-win. And this is exactly why people in the diaspora need to come back to the UK.
Yes.
Because we have the knowledge, come we have the know-how. Yes, we have to, yeah, come back to Zambia. So it's like, we have the know-how, and it's like, okay, we have the amount of money that people are making back in England or in the US. If you're able to save that and pour it back into this economy, we can do so much more, which is why I like the whole initiative about cooperatives. But even that is just now becoming saturated because everyone's now looking to do chickens, and it's like
there's no imagination.
It's like, okay, but what else is needed,
right?
Like,
yeah,
what else is needed? And like, even for my business, I'm thinking, okay, how do we move it in 5 years? Where do I see myself next year?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we'll have a grocery store, fine. I would love to be selling iPhones. Like, I would love to be Zambia's iPhone provider. Imagine you just go on my website, purchase your iPhone. You know, Apple sells it to us wholesale, and we're able to distribute, or Samsung, or look, I want our platform to be the go-to platform for literally anything. And it's going to take a long time to get there. It's going to take a lot of technology and a lot of collaboration and innovation, but I'm willing to learn. And the funniest thing is, like, I am not confident enough to do this in the Western world because it's already been done. The market's so saturated. I can see the potential of what I'm doing here, and I really want to just stick it out.
Yeah, so many things.
Whoa. I know.
It's like, I'm like, where do we go? My gosh. Okay, so when you arrived, it's like, you know, you've been doing a lot of networking.
Yes.
And what is it that you're seeing?
What I'm seeing is, do you know, I am so, so grateful for everyone that's been, you know, communicating with me, because people have been very forthcoming, and I've been able to meet even with you. Do you know what I mean? I'm so grateful that you come from Kabwe all the way to see me. Like, it's a big deal. It's a big deal, because time is money and your time is worth so much. So I'm grateful for that. Like, people are helping me in my business. You know, you should look at that person, talk to that person. The value that I'm getting verbally is amazing. You know, the potential of it being financial as well is amazing. So I'm happy with the connections that I haven't had any bad Zambian experiences yet. Yet.
No. We'll say that it'll be positive.
It will be positive, because I feel like at the moment people are waking up and seeing that, okay, the youth have so much power. I don't even know if I can call myself a youth anymore. Like, I think I'm getting old.
Like, where does youth end? I always wonder about that, because I'm like, I think I've passed it. I don't know. Like, yeah,
maybe I am, maybe I'm not. Like,
yeah,
but people keep saying, yeah, you are a youth.
No, like, but listen, but talk us through this, because I think that a lot of people, when they're thinking about coming back to Zambia, the narrative is that it's so hard, you're overqualified, you know, there's no opportunities.
there's, you know, like you it would just be like a, it would just be a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about the electricity, internet, everything is like, Lord Jesus, why put myself through
you
that?
You have to be able to create your own opportunities. Mm. And there was this guy, I think his name's CJ, he owns Urban Lusaka. Mm. So when I went to the Musa Otunya pitch that Mara from Jacaranda Hub invited me to, I was listening to a speech that he was saying, and he was like, he came from America, I think New York, and he came here and he could see the opportunities for like some of the businesses that he set up. And then, you know, everyone's always like, oh, well done for doing this for Zambians. And then he's like, but why are you Zambians not doing it? So for him, it's almost like, I think...
Where is he from? He's from the States?
Yeah, he's from America. Oh, okay, white man.
Okay.
And he basically was just like, I am so grateful for this country, you know, because there's so much potential. And I think another person was saying how, you know, any problem that you see in Zambia is a potential business idea.
Exactly.
So, like, if you're coming here with the mindset of, oh, Zambia hasn't got this, Zambia hasn't got that, if you're able to solve that problem... Because there are people who see the value of that. And if people are able to benefit from that, you're able to monetize it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like as soon as you come here, your eyes are just open. Like, I've extended my stay, and I've already told you I might extend it. I might not go back. Because of this potential that I'm seeing, I'm like, we could do this. We could do that. We could do this. We could do that. I can't solve all of our problems. However, I can identify what I'm capable of solving. And looking at how to monetize it. And I always say it's so imperative and it's so important for us to make money and not to look at it as a charity. Because sometimes people look at, oh, you know, in Zambia, let's just send money and donate. No, that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work to build our economy. We need to be able to provide jobs. We need to be able to empower people to come together and collaborate and make more money. Mm-hmm. That's how people are happy. Like, it doesn't buy happiness, but it really helps. Mm-hmm. You know, it helps. So, like, at the end of the day, that's what we need to be doing.
Okay, so another topic that I love to talk about is networking, and I feel like you are a master networker.
Am I? That's you. Oh my goodness, you are the networking queen. Like, do you know, next in the dictionary there's a picture of you next to networking. It's her. Like, no, but thank you. I'm trying.
No, I think you're amazing.
I'm trying.
I would love for you to give some pointers. This is my pet peeve.
Yeah.
This is my pet peeve.
Okay.
We'll go for like an event. There's like a networking event, you know, I don't know, whoever sponsors like some event. Mm-hmm. And then you land there and then people will enter. They'll look through the room, look for the person they know, and then go straight to that person.
No, stick to that person the whole night.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
no.
And then if somebody latches onto me, for lack of a better word, I'm like, okay, I'm going to start talking to somebody. They're like, oh, I'm coming. I'm like,
no, that's not the point.
That's my pet peeve. Just talk to us about that.
You know, so when I landed, I landed on a Thursday, and I'm part of a village bank within Ndola. It's called Pikla. And when I went to the village bank, I remember I had not known anyone. I only knew my cousin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone was sitting down. They could see that I wasn't from here and stuff. And, you know, I was like, okay, I'll eat my food. Let's get it rolling.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, hi, everyone. My name is Monday and this is what I do. And I'd like to collaborate. And I wanted to know what you guys do, see if we can potentially work together. Mm-hmm. And I did that to every single person that I came across. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, this is your number. This is your number. I took your number. You know, I've actually got... I've got a spreadsheet of a register.
Yeah.
So I put these details down, or I ask people to put their details in there, the industry, the company that they work for, their interests. And sometimes you might not be able to use that information there or work with that person there and then.
Yeah.
But later on down the line, you're like, oh, there was that person that I met, you know. You remember you do that.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. There might be that person that can help me. That's what it is. I think if you're in a room full of people and you don't know anyone, you just have to think about your time as currency. Time is money. And if you don't make these connections, you never know who knows who. If you don't make these connections, you will forever be like, oh yeah, you know, I met that lady there. You know, she's now a millionaire. Oh yeah, you know, now she's a, no, let's, why don't we discuss and why don't we talk about our ideas and why don't we just introduce each other? And that's why I was even saying to, when I was at the Musi Otunya pitch, we had come about 2 hours early and we set up, and then somebody saw that where we had set up was where ZMBC had now done, they've featured our background and stuff.
Nice.
And then the person came and put their thing there. I was like, huh? And then I remember Danny was like, what should we do? And I was like, do you know what? In this situation, you just have to be nice. Because you never know who's who, exactly. And you don't know who's talking. And the moment that we react, everyone's going to see us, but we saw what he did. So just leave it, and let's just get as much value as we can in the room. And for me, it's just all about you walking into a room and you being a brand, and you know, you being nice and having your literature and being able to be like, okay, that was a good meeting. Imagine me now spending hours at a certain place, and sometimes there's like no food, there's no drink. What was the point of leaving?
Yeah,
you know. And yeah, you just have to be able to get as much value out of the room as possible.
Yeah, but you know what, you've been saying it over and over and over again. You've been saying collaborate.
Yeah.
Now, listen, there are people that are like, collaborate is an insult to them. Like, it's a swear word.
Okay. Why?
Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, people just, there's this fear about working with somebody else. And it's like, I should do everything myself. Mm. Like, you know, I want to be that self-made person. Is there even such a thing as self-made?
There's no such thing. But that's the thing. You know? If you were to define self-made, okay, recently Rihanna's come out as the first self-made billionaire or something. Mm-hmm. Self-made is the fact that I have come in a room and I've said, this is what my brand is, this is what we're doing, and I'm representing myself, and I need everybody else to help me get to this goal. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you yourself have come together and brought those people. You're the common denominator. That's what I think being self-made is.
Mm.
It's not about you doing everything yourself. You can't do everything yourself. You do not. You lack the skills. You lack the capacity in your brain. Cannot do everything. You've only got so many hours in a day. And this is why you think Steve Jobs doesn't want to do everything himself. Like, didn't want to do everything himself. I'm sure he did. But you can't. You know, there's people who are good at finance, people who are good at accounting, people who are good at management, you know, supply chain, and so much stuff, marketing. How do you expect to do that? And in this short space of time that we have on this earth, you know, realistically speaking, I feel like, from your 20s is when you're really trying to learn what you actually like to do. Your 30s, I feel, are, okay, I now know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to do. Your 40s, that's when you're making the money.
Yeah.
And it's like, so when in those 20 years, are you going to be able to do everything yourself? If you want to accelerate your business, and if you want to be able to, it depends on what you want as a person.
Yeah.
But you have to, like, even as a publisher, if you publish your own book, you still have to go and get it printed. You still have to go and buy the ink. You still have to, there's so many things you cannot work on your own. You going onto your laptop, you're using another resource, you know, and it's coming out of that mindset. You can't be scared. You have to choose your hard because it's already hard working on your own. So working with somebody else eases that hard. It's still hard, but it eases it. You know, you just have to choose what's the right thing to do.
Yeah. I think there's, when I think about it more, I've heard things like, oh, that means we'll get less money. Oh, they will steal my idea if I go for a networking event, and I will share it, and then they'll steal my idea.
I get that a lot.
And
okay, so two things you've said there. You said stealing the idea, and I wouldn't make enough money.
Mm-hmm.
So with regards to the money part of things, money is a numbers game.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to, let me say, how many times have you thought about nails? I'm just randomly. Nails are made from iron, right? How many
things can you think of? I don't know. An iron sheet is probably worth, let's say an iron sheet is about £100. Nails are maybe about 50 pence for 100 of them. It probably is more profitable to make the nails than it is to make the iron sheets, right? Mm-hmm. And with the nails, they sell a lot because it's a numbers game. Mm-hmm. And you have to think about it that way. It's like, okay, if I'm able to work with other people, then I'm able to add my margin and I'm able to make more money. Because at the end of the day, if more people are seeing my product, mm-hmm. then I'm making more money. Mm-hmm. You can't expect to make your £1 million from True. Like, I can't expect you to be the only customer that pays that premium. Exactly. No, that's not fair.
Yeah.
That's not fair to do. And it's not realistic. That's not how life works. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing that you said was people stealing ideas.
Yeah.
So I get this a lot. And I remember when I started the business, people now were sending me my competitors. And I think I had like two competitors. I'm not going to mention them. But two competitors. And they were like, this person's doing that. And, you know, they've got funding from this person. And then that person's doing this. And I was just like, may the best person win. May the best person win. Because at the end of the day, I didn't know that they were doing this. Mm. And I always feel like ideas are ideas. If there's a problem, somebody's thought about solving it.
Yeah.
So don't think that you're the only person
who's
ever thought of it. And I always, and I said this to somebody yesterday, was like, you know, if with my idea, I always feel like God has placed it on my heart to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I didn't execute Zasik Global, it would have gone to somebody's head and they would have been able to execute it in the way that God wants them to do. So for me, I'm remaining resilient in the fact that I have goals and I have aspirations and nobody has what I have. They don't have my charisma. They don't have my drive. They don't have my personality. And that is what my brand is. That's what Zasik is. When they see the product, they can see me in the product and they can trust me. So if they want to, it's like bread. Like there's 50 different types of breads. Like, are you telling me that your people are going to stop making bread?
Yeah.
Because ShopRite has their own brand? No, like people continuously, competition is amazing because it keeps you on your toes. Yeah. So I'm never really shocked about, oh, somebody's done this. I'm like, well done, this is what I did. I don't even mind meeting with my competitor and being like, yeah, how are you doing this? Yeah, man, we're doing, what could go wrong?
Right.
You know, why are we so bent up on being so greedy?
Mm-hmm.
Like they really, it doesn't benefit anyone. So for me, I think competition is good. If somebody wants to steal the idea, let them do so. But I feel like if something's not original, if somebody steals an idea, they won't have that passion that you have.
Yeah, and they won't do it the way you do.
No, they won't.
Because as much as you can see something from the outside, they don't know the ins and outs of how you're doing it. So it'd probably fail anyway.
And everyone's at a different stage within like their business journeys. So like, let's say for me, I've told you, like I've sold hair before, I've sold lashes. Yeah. So I've got that experience. If somebody's starting afresh and like, I can do that, and they have no experience, no, you're 10 levels behind me because I have this experience and this is what I'm doing. You're going to try and do this thing and trying to compete with me, but it's going to be so difficult for you. And then that's where people fall off. And it's like, okay, just find the thing that you're passionate about. If you're competitive with somebody else, fine. Mm. But just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I don't... Gosh. Okay. I think we're almost coming to time.
Oh, my...
But it's just like so good. Yes, we are. Oh, yeah, okay. We're on track.
Okay, good.
So... Ah, so good. I love this conversation. I feel like it was better.
It was.
So I think it was a good thing that the original got lost, guys. But I think there's so much that you've said.
Yes.
So I don't want to go with the cheesy, where do you see yourself in, you know, like 5 years? That's what people always end with, you know, I'm just like, really?
Yeah.
Let's see, what can we go with?
Okay.
Right now, you know, who are the types of people, the types of collaborations that you're hoping for? And, you know, where are you seeing like opportunities for the business?
So, at the moment, I would like to work with people within different
towns in Zambia, because I have plans on in the future to franchise the model all around Zambia. I'd like to work with people who want to invest, people who want to market, who want to grow the brand and see the vision. I definitely feel like it's not just going to be groceries on the platform, and if you can't,
but it's increased now. Yeah. I saw there was like flowers, we've got fresh flowers, we've got gifts,
and the potential is there, and we can work with anyone from packaging to, you know, somebody with a market store. You know, in Soweto, I was in Soweto last weekend.
Yeah.
Was it last two weeks ago? We went at 5 a.m.
Wow.
I have never had so much respect for people.
Yeah.
From the outside looking in, you know, you see how dirty it is.
Mm.
But if you see the value.
That's a whole economy in there.
A whole economy.
It's like intense
the
inside there.
The amount of money that is
that's in there. Yeah. It's a lot.
Is a lot. And from that day, like, I have so much respect for them. So anyone from that level to farmers to people in tech, people in finance, in accounting, any industry, I would love to collaborate with them and see where we can work together, because I know I can't do it alone.
Okay. Where can people find you? How do they support you? How do they collaborate with you? Like, get in touch with you.
Okay. Yeah. So my business is www.zasikglobal.com. That's the business that allows Zambians all over the world to purchase groceries for their family and friends in Zambia. My personal Instagram is harmslondon, that's H-A-R-M-Z London. And yeah,
let me tell you, this lady, you have to follow her.
Oh my
goodness. She has the best fashion all the time. I'm always like, look at this lady, just looking beautiful out in these streets.
I'm trying. And that's just the trying to balance. That's my balance, isn't it? It's like, I love fashion, but I also have this business that I want to run. So yeah, that's my thing. That's my chi.
Yeah. You know what? It has been so amazing to
actually do this in person.
I feel like you've so many good things that you shared, and I'm just so grateful that you, first of all, you said that you could do the interview again. Because I know. Oh my God.
I was happy. I was happy that we were doing it again. That way I got to meet you and we got to do this again. And yeah, you know, what did I say to you? I said, like, let go and let God.
Yes,
it's okay. It's fine. If it's gone, it's gone. It's out in the universe. We've got this now.
Yes. This is beautiful.
Yes.
So thank you.
No, it's okay. Thank you for having me.
Don't you love Monday? Again, shout out to Kunda for the connect. Now, I want to point out something very important. Monday is a magnet to great opportunities. Like, people literally want to help her all the time. They connect her with people that can enhance her business. People invite her into influential rooms. She literally attracts a soft life. It is not because she is special. It is because she is a self-starter and she has a track record of actually working. I'm going to say it straight, guys. There is nothing more irritating than trying to give advice to someone who is doing nothing, because guess what they will do with your advice? Nothing. It's better to help someone who is actually in motion, who is trying, who is making things work with the little resources they have, who is not making excuses about their limitations. Stop asking people to be your mentors when you are currently doing nothing. Stop it. It's not that they don't want to help you. It's that you don't want to help yourself first. And they know their time is precious. So it's better to invest in helping a Monde, because there's a higher chance that there will be a return on their investment. So get up and start doing. Do something. Then people will want to help you. I'm sorry, today I'm not sugarcoating nothing. It is what it is, okay? So at Africana Woman, we give our guests their roses right now. Please find Monday on Instagram at Harms London. Tell her you heard her on the Africana Woman podcast. Take a screenshot of the episode and tag us. We want to keep the conversation going. The mission of Africana Woman has always been to tell more African women's stories. One of the ways that we're doing this is by helping you start your own podcast. If you have a burning idea and you're interested in launching a podcast, but you don't know where to start, contact us at africanawoman@gmail.com. Your story is important. My playground is Instagram. Find me at Chulu by Design. Tag me, tell your friends about the Africana Woman podcast. And again, leave a review, especially on Apple Podcast, because that helps us spread the word about this show to more African sisters out there. So talk to you soon. This has been a production of Africana Woman Media.